As you make your summer vacation plans, be sure to leave room in your suitcase, or at least on your nightstand, for a great book. Today, summer reading recommendations. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'll find out what books should be on our summer reading lists from Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Annie Leonard is also here with her recommendations from The Next Chapter in Knoxville. We'll be talking about great beach reads, haunting fiction, fantasy to help you escape, and fascinating nonfiction. We also want to hear what's on your reading list. Post on our Facebook page or send us an email. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Summer is almost here, and hopefully it will bring with it a few extra leisure hours for you. Enough time to read a great book or two. This hour, we'll get summer reading picks from Jan Weissmiller of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Good morning, Jan.
Good morning.
Paul Ingram, also of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Charity.
And from Annie Leonard of The Next Chapter in Knoxville. Hi, Annie.
Hi, Charity.
And Annie, because you drove the farthest to be on the show today, I'm going to let you start. And what we're going to do, we'll take turns first talking about the new fiction books that you're most excited about this summer. We'll talk about nonfiction later in the hour. We also want to know what is on your reading list for the summer. We're not going to have time to take calls this hour, but please post the books you're excited about on our Facebook page or send us an email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet at us too at IPR Talk. Annie, what's your first pick today?
Well, this last summer, let me preface it. Last summer, we had a lot of fun with a couple of books by a woman named Deborah Harkness. And those were Discovery of Witches and The Shadow of Night. And so I was looking for something to kind of follow that up for my legions of customers that loved it. And I found a new book by Bea Ridgway called The River of No Return. And so this is fantasy, time travel. It's a little bit on its head with the time travel aspect of it. And I don't want to tell you too much, but there's dashing heroes, lots of good meaty history in it, several feisty heroines, and lots of adventure, a couple of good battle scenes, a good street riot, and even a punk rock figure. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of fun. And if you liked Discovery of Witches or maybe Outlander by Diana Gabaldon, you'll like River of No Return.
All right. And this sounds like a book that maybe if you have teenagers in your house, it may be something that they could read and you could read and enjoy together.
Yeah, maybe there's a little bit of adult topics for the teenagers,
the
older teenagers. Yeah. I'm thinking of a couple of scenes in particular that might be for the older teens.
All right. So The River of No Return by Bea Ridgway, our first pick from Annie today. And Jan, you're up next.
Well, I have a zombie novel, A Questionable Shape by Bennett Sims, and published by a very small press called $2 Radio. And Bennett Sims actually lives in Iowa City. He is a graduate of the Writers' Workshop, and he was a provost fellow last year, and I think he's spending another year in town, which is great. And he is from Louisiana and California, and this book is set in Baton Rouge. And it's very philosophical. I guess it's a meta zombie novel. It's metafictional, and it you can see by the cover that the cover is the design of the Hitchcock movie poster Vertigo.
Right. So we're pulling us into the.
So there's a lot of.
It doesn't have any zombies on the cover. So
no
you won't
zombies
make
on
a
the
guess.
Cover. There is red, which. Blood. But anyway.
So, Jan, have you read a lot of the zombie novels that have come out in the past few years?
I was seduced into reading this zombie novel after I heard him read at Prairie Lights, and it was just an amazing reading because he was able to talk about, Heidegger and Hitchcock. But at the same time, the plot is very compelling. It's these, two boys that have always been friends, one of whom's father has died, but there is a zombie apocalypse, and so they're searching for this father and trying not to become, victims themselves.
Zombies themselves, yes.
And, but But the riffs, and there are footnotes, and are just wonderful. It's just a remarkable book.
A high-end zombie book.
Right, an intellectual zombie novel, although there may be others. I admit I'm not
Zone
well-versed.
Zone 1 by Colson Whitehead.
All right. Maybe a zombie novel is a good place to be intellectual because it doesn't get in the way. I mean, it's not.
That's true. And,
perfect. All right, that's A Questionable Shape by Bennett Sims. And Paul, what's your first pick?
It's Jewelweed by David Rhodes. I think everybody remembers Driftless, which came out a few years ago and was the Iowa Everybody Reads book. And he has
All Iowa Reads, yeah.
All Iowa Reads, yeah. And he has the very interesting backstory of having been the glowing workshop child who wrote while he was in the workshop and wrote several books, and then had an accident and was paralyzed and continued to write but didn't continue to publish. And the people at Milkweed Editions just discovered him. This was so incredible. They said, "Is this guy still around?" And they said, "Sure he is." And they just went to his house and said, "Well, have you got something finished?" "Well, almost." And they say, "Well, we'll do it." And he became an overnight sensation. His books are short on plot and high on philosophy and psychology. They're often people who are having very hard times depend on other people who have had similar hard times. And the books are just gorgeous. He writes so well. He just read at Prairie Lights, and he was just hugely moving. He just kept saying over and over again, "Community, community, community is everything. If you can get people to join each other, you can do wonderful things."
And what is Jewelweed about?
Well, it's about a couple of people. A kid who has a problem, another younger man who is just out of jail, and they are both have really bad feelings about themselves, and they sort of, in this tiny town in Wisconsin, sort of work themselves into knowing each other and being the best things that could happen for each other. And again, it's just a lovely book. And
all right.
He talked about Jewelweed as the Jewelweed has these tiny little flowers, and on each flower in the morning there will be a drop of dew, and it will look like it will look like a jewel. It will look like, and he said that's sort of the theme of my book, is that people are jewels in ways that they sometimes cannot tell themselves. It needs another person.
All right. Jewelweed by David Rhodes. And Annie, we are back to you for book number two.
Well, this one was actually another one of the ones that I found while I was looking for that follow-up. And it's also fantasy. I'll go with a second one on that. But this one is very different and maybe a little bit like your zombie novel. This takes two mythical creatures, a golem, which is a particular kind of Jewish mud person that's created by a zombie specifically to carry out the requirements of a particular individual, and a genie who I think we all have some idea what a genie is. And Helene Wecker wrote this book called The Golem and the Genie, and I went into it thinking, what a fun concept, but it turned out to be extraordinarily moving. And it was more a story of outsiders trying to fit in. And it takes place mostly in New York City of the turn of the last century, in the immigrant enclaves of the Syrian immigrants and the Jewish immigrants. and these two very outsiders among outsiders trying to make their way, coming to together to be friends and try to support each other because they're the only two creatures that they can be themselves with. And they both have a very ancient evil who's pursuing them. But it's very philosophical, beautifully written, had me in tears many times. This was a wonderful book. Not as lighthearted and fun, but definitely something that will stay with you. I loved it. The Golem and the Genie.
By Helene Wecker.
Yes.
All right. Jan, we're back to you.
Well, I have Jean Thompson's new novel, The Humanity Project, and her last novel, The Year We Left Home, is the All Iowa Reads book this year. And The Year We Left Home is about, follows the lives of four siblings in Iowa between 1973 and the present. And so this book is really different in one way, except that her writing, obviously she has a voice and the voice is still hers in this book too. But this book is darker in some ways and maybe lighter in some ways too, because it's about a starts with a girl named Linnea who's in Ohio, a teenager living with her mother and her stepfather and her stepsister and her half-brother, and she's unhappy and feels, you know, neglected by her parents who are in love with each other and their own child. And then she's involved in a school shooting. She's a survivor of a school shooting. And she's very traumatized. And so the family decides to send her to live with her father, who's sort of a ne'er-do-well in Northern California. And she gets out there, and he obviously is not prepared to be the father of a sullen teenager. And the neighbor, his neighbor, is a nurse, and she has the care of a woman named Mrs. Foster who's very wealthy and has a charitable foundation called the Humanity Project. And her goal is to give money to people to be good. And so that's kind of the plot, and you can sort of imagine how compelling it is.
Is it uplifting?
Yeah, it is actually, because of Mrs. Foster. And even, you know, even I've always liked narrators that are teenagers. You know, I still do. I like To Kill a Mockingbird, and I like The Catcher in the Rye, mm-hmm. and I still do as an adult. And so there's something about their voice, even though they're often
a little bit unreliable.
Unreliable, traumatized, funny.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. All right. That is The Humanity Project by Jean Thompson. We'll come back after a break. We'll get Paul Ingram's next pick. We're getting our summer reading list put together today with the help of some of Iowa's premier independent booksellers. Paul Ingram and Jan Weissmiller are here from Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. And Annie Leonard is here from The Next Chapter Books in Knoxville. And we also want to know what's on your summer reading list. You can post on our Facebook page. You can also send us email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're getting summer reading recommendations from some of Iowa's premier independent booksellers. With me is Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City and Annie Leonard of The Next Chapter in Knoxville. We will be putting this list up on our Facebook page and also up on our website after the show. So, you know, keep your pens ready. But if you miss something, you will have another shot. We also want to know what's on your summer reading list. You can post on our Facebook page or send us email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us as well. We have this recommendation from Jennifer on Facebook. Let's Pretend This Never Happened by Jenny Lawson. She says it's a freaking hysterical memoir. Seriously, literally laughed out loud. And I think that came out about a year ago.
Yeah, we talked about it then. Yeah.
All right. And Paul, you are up next with your next fiction pick.
Oh, I just discovered a guy named Tim Hallinan, Hallinan, and the book that I'm really is a mystery. It's a sort of a tough guy mystery, and the book is called Little Elvises, and it's very funny. It's about the time in history when Elvis was just coming around, a whole bunch of these sort of mafia types had sons who looked sort of just like Elvis. And they decided to set them up as Elvis singers. You know, they didn't know anything about Elvis Presley and his history in the South or anything like that. But they had these Philly kids.
Right, they thought, we can take advantage
and,
of this.
The main character in the book is a guy named Junior Bender. And his job is to do the sort of private detective work for the mafia. And so he has to do a good job, you know, and they call him in and one of their kids along, you know, back in the 50s, that they need to find out something about him. And it's just hysterical. He there were some of these guys who couldn't sing a note, and some of these guys who could sing a little bit, but nobody made any money. And the book is very exciting and really fast moving, and it came out in paperback, so it's a good fast summer read.
All right, a great beach read. All right, Little Elvises by Tim Hallinan.
Yeah, Hallinan.
Right. Okay, and back to you, Annie.
So the next book I want to talk about has been our surprise bestseller this season. It's a book called Seven Locks by Christine Wade. It's a historical fiction, and it takes place just before the American Revolution in the Catskill Mountains in New York, in a Dutch community. And so these people are still very much tied to their Dutch heritage. Many of them speak Dutch instead of English. And it's the story of one particular woman who has a reputation as quite a scold. And she has a husband who is really not the help that she wants him to be around their dairy farm. She feels that she has to do all the work. And one day, after she scolds him really soundly, he leaves and he never comes back. And so the story is really about her life, how she finds a way to survive on her own in this really frontier society. But one of the best things about this book is the voice. It's a completely different voice. It takes a few pages to get into the rhythm of the way that Christine Wade has written this woman's voice, and we never find out what her name is.
Does it have a Dutch feel to it?
Perhaps. You know, it's not like she's speaking in an accent like maybe in Huck Finn or something like that. But she's got just a very different voice. And one of the other really wonderful parts about this book that set it apart was the view that it gives us of what it was like to be a civilian during the revolution. And so it's been remarkable. It's beautiful. So for those of you that like to have a beautiful cover, it's a gorgeous book. I actually don't have it with me.
You remember
that's
who published
the one I
it?
Forgot.
Yes.
It is Atria.
Atria. There you go.
Simon and Schuster.
Yeah.
So this one really spreading by word of mouth among your clients.
Yes. It's just been a big hit.
And Paul, you loved that Bernard Bailyn book. A historical book about the same period that came out.
Oh,
right before
Christmas. That was fantastic. What was it called?
It was by Bernard Bailyn.
Bailyn.
Yeah,
okay.
And it was about the first 100 years of people in America.
Oh, excellent.
And
there's a lot of Dutch stuff in it.
And there's a lot of Dutch stuff, but it goes up and down the coast. And, you know, we weren't a country.
And it
was, you remember the Toni Morrison book? The one where that took place in the 1700s, the one just before this one. Oh, it was
the name is escaping me, but yes.
Oh.
Okay, so the Bernard Bailyn is the barbarous
years.
The barbarous years.
Years.
And and it was really, it was pretty terrible. And he makes no bones about it.
All right. So the one you were talking about, Annie, Seven Locks by Christine Wade.
Always good to get another recommendation.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. We're all going to have a lot more to read when we leave this room today. Jan, what's your next pick?
I have The Newlyweds by Nell Freudenberger. And she is... She's a great writer. This is her third book. She was at Prairie Lights for her first book, which was called Lucky Girls, and I also recommend that. But this is just out in paperback. It actually came out last year, and it's the story of a young woman, Amina, from Bangladesh, who goes online looking for romance and meets online George Stiller, and he is an engineer in Rochester, New York, about maybe 7 or 8 years older than she is. They seem like a very unlikely pair. She's very vivacious, and he's not. But they decide that they're going to give it a chance, and she comes over, and they get married. He arranges everything. He buys the house. He does all this, you know, while they're online, and then she comes over, but not telling him that her plan is to bring her entire family within a year.
Wow. Mm-hmm. All right. That is The Newlyweds by Nell Freudenberger. And Paul, we probably need to pick up the pace a little bit if we're going to get through these lists. So, okay. Paul, what's your next one?
One of the great Iowa writers that very few people know about, Tom Drury, is from Iowa. He's written a handful of books, almost all about Iowa. This new one is called Pacific, and half of it takes place in a little town in Iowa. We're in an area called Grouse County, and the rest of it takes place as half of this family goes to California to live with the divorced wife of the guy who lives there, and the kid is Micah, and he is 14, and he is wonderful. You will just love him. California guys give him drugs, but not terrible drugs. And he says, "I know all about this. I know all about this." You know, and it moves back and forth very quickly. And he knows how Iowa people talk. He knows what's important to them. And Grouse County. There was a previous book, a Grouse County book called The End of Vandalism, which is available in paperback now, and it has some of these same characters. But this is not a very long book, but virtually every page is good.
All right. That is Pacific by Tom Drury. And Annie, we're back to you.
Okay, well, so I realize I'm very heavy on the historical fiction, but the next one I want to talk about is Cinnamon and Gunpowder by Eli Brown. It's coming out next month. It's not quite out yet. And this is what I think just the perfect summer read. It's a story, takes place in the early 1800s about a very high-class chef, personal chef to a lord of something or other. And one day, their dinner party is attacked by a woman pirate named Hannah Mabbitt. And she kills his employer and takes him captive and takes him back to her ship. And after softening him up some, she lets him know that he will be cooking a sumptuous meal for her every Sunday, something different every time, or she'll kill him. And he's used to having the best ingredients, the best equipment, and somehow he has to make do with, you know, cornmeal with weevils in it and terrible ingredients and filthy kitchen. And this is really the story of how he figures out how to do that and how he gets to know the crew and all of their adventures. Lots of great battle scenes, of course, some love stories and a little bit of politics about China and the Opium Wars thrown in. So this one, great, great summer read.
What a great concept. Cinnamon and Gunpowder by Eli Brown. And Jan, we're back to you.
Okay, well, I have, again, I have a book that was out last year and has just come out in paperback and is, I think, going to be a great summer read called The Art Forger by B.A. Shapiro. And it's based on the famous heist of a painting at the Isabel Stewart Gardner Museum in Boston, and which is still an unsolved art theft. And so in this in this story, this young woman has agreed to copy a painting, and she gets this painting in a crate. And she's being paid a lot of money. She obviously doesn't have much money. She's being paid a lot of money to do it, and she gets this painting in the crate, and she realizes that it probably is the stolen painting.
Wow.
And the story goes on from there.
All right. That sounds great.
Yeah. And we've been selling it like crazy.
Yeah? Yeah. The Art Forger by B.A. Shapiro. And Paul, back to you.
Okay. I've got a book that's not quite fiction. It's the break has to be made somehow.
All right. it can be a muddy break.
Yeah, it's a muddy break. It's called The Towers of Trebizond by Rose McCauley, and it was written in the early 50s. And the New York Review of Books, in their wonderful reestablishment of classics, has brought this book out. And Rose McCauley was a traveler, and she'd go to very unseemly places for British ladies to go, like to Trebizond is in Turkey, and she would be riding camels. And this book is very famous for its first line. "Take my camel, dear," said my Aunt Dot as she climbed down from this animal on her return from High Mass.
Right.
And Aunt Dot and Rose McCauley and a few other wonderful people, a Anglican minister, just go all over Turkey and have the most wonderful time. Aunt Dot is based on Dorothy Sayers, who was best friends with Rose McCauley. And it is a huge amount of the talk that goes on in Turkey is about the Church of England, and it is so lovely. It's almost impossible not to just keep going with.
All right, the Towers of Trebizond by Rose McCauley, and so it's memoir.
It's memoir, travel
fictionalized
memoir.
Yeah. Okay,
we don't know how fictionalized
right.
it is.
One never does. Yeah.
All right, and that is a reissue. Mm-hmm. And next up, Annie.
Well, the next book I want to talk about is called Mary Coyne by Marissa Silver. And on the cover is that famous picture that many of us are familiar with from the Depression, of the mother nursing her child. The Dorothea Lange, yes. And this is actually a novelization of the real people in this picture.
Oh, wow.
And it's fictionalized, and so the names are changed, but there's three main characters. One of them is Mary Coyne, and she is the woman in the photograph, and the other one is the photographer. And the third person is a man in our times who is putting some pieces together involving this whole story. And this is a wonderful way to reimagine a very difficult time in our nation's history and a famous picture.
All right.
That sounds great.
It does.
What's the author's name?
Marissa Silver.
Has she written other things?
Not that I know of. I think this is her first novel. No, it isn't. I'm sorry. She's also read Alone with You and The God of War.
I don't remember those. Yeah.
Mary Coyne by Marissa Silver. And we're back to you, Jan.
Should I switch to nonfiction?
You can do whatever you like.
I've already done so.
I can say briefly about another book that hasn't come out yet that we're excited to get, which is a novel, which is Curtis Sittenfeld's new book called Sisterland, which is coming out like in a couple of weeks. And it's about two sisters in their late 20s, and they're identical twins, and they're psychic. And one of them is pretty normal. She has a couple kids and a good marriage. The other one is not normal. And so we're really looking forward to having that in the store. And Curtis is also going to come to the book festival in October.
Yeah. Oh, terrific. And that's coming out toward the end of June. So Curtis Sittenfeld.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the novel
she used to work
is
at Prairie Lights.
She wrote Prep and American Wife.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Incidentally, Tom Drury is coming to the festival in the fall, too.
Okay. All right. And Paul, in 2 minutes, less than 2 minutes.
I want to talk about the new David Sedaris, Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls. And it is, well, what do you say? It's funny. And usually with his things, he'll have a very vague theme running through it. And the theme running through this one is doing things with your lover and how that sort of makes a very interesting – it just adds wonderful stuff to your relationship. And I just
– like exploring diabetes with owls.
Yeah. Among the things they do is they're swimming in outside on Hawaii, and they come to one of these big loggerhead turtles, and it just sort of appears between them. Can I read you a little bit?
Well, we have less than a minute left.
All right. I'll let you read it yourself.
Okay.
You won't regret.
Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls by David Sedaris. As funny as his early books?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We'll be back with more recommendations for summer reading from Paul Ingram and Jan Weiss-Miller of Prairie Lights Books in Iowa City and from Annie Leonard of The Next Chapter in Knoxville. We have a couple recommendations from listeners as well. Right now, let's see if I can find it fast enough. One of my perennial favorites is A Short History of Nearly Everything by Bill Bryson. I rarely reread books, but I never tire of this one. That's from Annie in Iowa City. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're talking about summer reading this hour and getting recommendations from Annie Leonard of The Next Chapter in Knoxville, from Paul Ingram and Jan Weiss-Miller from Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. I'm keeping track of everything, so we will put the list up on our Facebook page and on our website after the show. We'd love to hear what you're hoping to read this summer, what you're planning to read, or what you want everyone else to read this summer. You can post on our Facebook page, tweet us, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Another listener recommendation, John from Cedar Rapids says, Murder as a Fine Art by David Morrell, former U of I professor best known for First Blood. Fantastic storytelling and very well written. And Annie, we are back to you, and we're going to move into the nonfiction realm now fully, right?
Fully, yes. So the one, this one is called The Boys in the Boat, Nine Americans and Their Epic Quest for Gold at the 1936 Berlin Olympics by Daniel James Brown. And on the surface, this is a story of this man who came from just nothing. He was abandoned as a child and worked his way into college at the University of Washington and made it onto the rowing team, which was very prestigious at that point, and had a coach who was really wanting to have a winning season and beat all of the elite colleges in California and that sort of thing. And they did.
And what year was this?
It starts in the 30s, and then they end up going to the Berlin Olympics and rowing, you know, going past Adolf Hitler and winning the gold medal. And so we know this is history, but this is a wonderful story, a rags to riches. If you liked Unbroken and even things like Seabiscuit, this will be a great read for you. Mm-hmm. And it's about the boat, which is a concept that's much more than just the ship itself. It's mm-hmm. this metaphysical unit of the people working in the boat and the boat and the water. And it's a great book.
There's also a great read. There's also a book about a women's rowing team from Madison that went to the Olympics in the 70s. I want to say it's got the rose. Yeah, it's also an amazing book.
All right. We'll have to try to dig
amazing
that one
sport.
Up.
Yeah.
All right, that's Boys in the Boat, Nine Americans and Their Epic Quest for Gold at the 1936 Berlin Olympics by Daniel James Brown. And Jan, your turn.
Okay, well, I've got the Selected Letters of Willa Cather, which I have only been reading. You know how you can pick around in letters. And
right.
This is a very large volume. It's 566 letters. And, you know, there is this question about whether it should even be published because she had asked that her letters never be published.
Right. But I'm so excited to read this.
But on the other hand, at this point, her reason was that she wanted to be known for her writing and not for her personal life. But at this point, there have been so many biographies that are probably – the letters are probably better than the biographies. And her estate has felt now that it's all right to publish the letters. And I think that's wonderful because they are just amazing. And I was just going to read just this letter is her very first, you know, the very first existent letter. And she was 14 when she wrote it. And it's being written to a friend, an older friend of the family named Helene Louise Stevens Stoll. And she's describing the neighbors. And she says, Carrie Minor has gone to college. The Metkers from Beatrice are visiting, and they will live here and run the new paper. Anson and his wife live where Mrs. Rowe used to live, so we are very near neighbors. I do not think they are happy together, but happy is a word few of us realize or are. Nothing he can do seems to please her, and she is cross as two sticks. Fred and Seward are still happy in their blissful illusion that they love each other as no one but Greek heroes ever thought of. They still amuse the town by their pranks, such as going swimming together, taking endless rides at night in closed hacks, acting out in the meadow, and spending Sundays in the woods. I should think there would be a great deal of ennui in such a romance.
Oh, God, that's a novelist.
Absolutely.
That's a young novelist
years old
letter.
Fabulous. All right, I mean, the selected letters of Willa Cather, yeah. Edited by Andrew Jewell and Janice Stout. And Paul, we are back to you.
Okay. This book I got excited about is called The Great Agnostic, Robert Ingersoll and American Free Thought. This was my grandfather's hero, and he wrote lots of stuff about having seen him at Chautauquas, and he would go all over America preaching against the church, and he was really smart, and he was incredibly kind. He did not make fun of religious folk, but argued with them like real people might argue, and he was on the side of virtually every great righteous. He was he supported the Jewish community. He supported women's rights. He supported a lot of great things. But he is known mostly for his religious stuff because that was what made the biggest splash at the time. And it's a great, great book. It's a very short book by Susan Jacoby, who is sort of the great historian of American secularism.
Okay.
And she's written other books, and this is the most fun.
All right. The Great Agnostic, Robert Ingersoll, and American Free Thought by Susan Jacoby. And Annie, we're back to you.
Well, the next one I want to talk about is After Visiting Friends, A Son's Story is the subtitle by a guy named Michael Haney. And this is a memoir that actually reads a lot like a thriller. It takes place in Chicago, so it's sort of fun to have all the familiar landmarks for those of us from this part of the country. But he came from a newspaper family. His dad was a newspaper man, and when he grew up, he became a newspaper man. But when he was a young boy, his father died, and he remembers being woken up in the middle of the night and how his mother took care of him and his brother from then on, and they grew up, and he went into the family business. And it wasn't until years later that he stumbled upon a description of how his father was found in an alley at 4 o'clock in the morning, and he wondered, what was that about? And so this book is about this process of discovering what happened to his father.
Oh, wow.
A
oh,
real
boy.
Page turner, a oh, real wow. page turner, but also with that sort of
personal
regional
research.
Yeah.
That sounds really good.
It is.
Important. Yeah.
All right. After Visiting Friends, A Son's Story by Michael Haney. And Jan, we're back to you.
Well, I have this book that's actually written by someone who's been working at Prairie Lights named Lucas Mann. He is a graduate of the nonfiction program at Iowa and was also a provost fellow last year. But it's called Class A, Baseball in the Middle of Everywhere. It's published by Pantheon. And it's a book about the Clinton Lumber Kings. And Lucas spent the season of 2010 over there writing about them and about the town. And it's just really quite a remarkable sort of socioeconomic study of Clinton as just one of the dying industrial towns in America, not just the Midwest. Mm-hmm. But under the sort of under the focus of baseball and the huge dream that it still presents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's a Latin American player in the book, and so that's actually got some chance of making it, and has still does, and it's been just getting phenomenal reviews. It's been out like about 3 weeks. It's been featured on NPR. It was on the New York Times blog the other day. It's being likened to, you know, mm-hmm. Some of the great baseball writing, like sort of an intellectual Bull Durham. Loneliness of the Long Distance. What are some of those books? But anyway,
those Harris books.
But it's also being described as very influenced by Joan Didion, that kind of writing. Mm-hmm. But it's really kind of great to be able to read about Clinton. You know, Lucas is from New York. He grew up in Greenwich Village. And so it's really, you know, but he has loved baseball all of his life. He knows a lot about baseball. Uh-huh. And he can constantly refer to episodes in the history of American baseball, which sadly, all the men in my family can do that, too. But
the importance, though, of a team like that to a town that doesn't have much else is extremely moving in lots of ways.
Well, and I always find it fascinating to think about these young men who come from all over the place who come to these small towns and play baseball.
Right.
That's fascinating.
Maybe for 1 year.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
But who have such, you know, idealistic. It's kind of a nice companion piece to the movie on
42.
Yeah, 42.
Yeah, right.
All right. That is Class A by Lucas Mann. And Paul, we're back to you.
Okay. This is a wonderful book by Monty Real. That sounds like an old movie star, I realize. But it's Monterreel. And it's called Between Man and Beast, An Unlikely Explorer, The Evolution Debates, and The African Adventure That Took the Victorian World by Storm. This is a story of not many people realize this, but the actual gorilla wasn't discovered until late, you know, after chimpanzees and anything else. And it became a religious issue. You know, people kept saying, well, where is this so-called gorilla that you have? And what is this? But they had bones. And of course, the natives knew the gorilla very, very well. And the main character of this book, I can't guess what his name is Paul de Chaillou, who was no kind of explorer at all. And was French, but decided he wanted to join the world of explorers and be the one to find the gorilla. And I'm not going to tell you whether he finds it or not, because I think it was unethical. But it has all these issues of, you know, Darwinian issues, colonialist issues, and just egos, male egos in the Victorian period. It's a great book.
All right. You know, I love this show, but I always feel a little depressed when we get done because there's so many books I want to read and only so much time. Between Man and Beast, An Unlikely Explorer, The Evolution Debates, and The African Adventure That Took the Victorian World by Storm by Monty Real. And Annie, we are back to you.
Okay, so this one is The Guns at Last Light, The War in Western Europe in 1944 to 45. And this is by Rick Atkinson. And this is the third in his trilogy about World War II in Europe. And he won a Pulitzer Prize for the first one, which was called An Army at Dawn. The beginning of this that talks about D-Day and the setup for D-Day, even though I knew exactly, I've watched a million documentaries on it, it still read like a thriller. My heart was pounding. I couldn't put it down. I was up until midnight reading, which for me is really late. And what a masterpiece this is. It's so intimate. And You can either read it in great gulps or in little morsels. And he's got quotes from everybody from generals to the little soldiers and the letters that they wrote home. And it's just a beautiful rendering of this event that made such a huge difference to all of us. And do I have time to read just one short paragraph?
Okay.
Down the 10 channels they plunged, two designated for each of the five forces streaming toward five beaches, Utah, Omaha, Gold, Juno, Sword, wakes braided and rebraided, the amber orb of a full moon rose through a thinning overcast off the port bow, and the sea sang as swells slipped along, every hull bound for a better world. Hallelujah, sang the sea, hallelujah. And the whole book is like that.
Oh,
highly
wonderful.
Recommend it.
The
yeah.
Guns at Last Light, The War in Western Europe, 1944 mm-hmm. through 45. Rick Atkinson and Jan, back to you. And we have 1 minute for you and 1 minute for Paul. So.
Okay. Well, I don't even have this book with me because we can't keep it on the shelf in Prairie Lights, but it's the new George Packer book about the title is Unwinding, and since I don't have it, I can't say the subtitle, but it's about an
inner history of the new America.
And it's sort of like Nickel and Dimed, except that it follows people from different classes over the last three decades in America. There's, there's a billionaire from Silicon Valley, but there's also a woman in the Rust Belt. There's a tobacco farmer. And it just examines, what has happened, how the social contract here is falling apart. But on the other hand, because it's so detailed and so compelling, you put the depressing parts on aside because you want to know. I mean, it's just an amazing book. I think it's probably the best nonfiction book of the summer and a really important book to read.
All right.
And he's a staff writer for The New Yorker, George Packer.
Right. Been getting a lot of buzz with us, too.
Unwinding, An Inner History of the New America by George Packer. And Paul, your last one, I know it's hard to pick out of that stack. And I promise we will put the entire list up on our website and up on our Facebook page. So even the ones that we had to skip, you'll get to know
this about. This is a book that is beautiful from the University of Chicago called The Book of Barely Imagined Beings, a 21st century bestiary. And everybody knows about medieval bestiaries where they'd have some made up, some not made up. And he takes several, he goes alphabetically through beasts that really exist and talks about early visions of what these beasts were and contemporary visions. And it has beautiful stuff. It's partly written in red to show certain kinds of emphasis, and the drawings in it are just stunning. It's a University of Chicago should be very proud.
All right, The Book of Barely Imagined Beings, and oh, there it is, by Casper Henderson. Yeah. And again, we will put the entire list up on our Facebook page and up on our website. And if you want recommendations from Paul and Jan and the staff at Prairie Lights, you can get those, of course, on their website, prairielights.com. And if you want to know what Annie's reading and her recommendations, you have a blog, right, Annie?
Yes,
so
we do.
People can follow along. If they search for the next chapter, thenextchapterbooks.wordpress.com, you can find out all about Annie's recommendations. And Annie Leonard, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was
fun. Great talking to you.
You too. It was wonderful to meet you both.
Annie Leonard of The Next Chapter Books in Knoxville, and also Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram. Thank you both for being here today.
Thanks, Charity.
Of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow is Horticulture Day. We're going to talk about aquaculture. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News.